Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. It is the end of the calendar year. It is wrap-up season. It is prepare your but well, you're probably already hopefully prepared your budgets for next year, but is definitely deep into the planning sessions for 2020. But as we always like to do here on the Enterprise Dish in the month of December, it's time to take a look back, Aaron. It's been a interesting year for Windows. A lot of changes from servicing, from just features and all that. Before we do that though, how's it going up in Seattle?
It's going well. It is budget season for us, and technically we're done, but still, you know, I think for the people who have my job, it's and even if you're sort of the IT budget owner, there's always sort of this, you know, you churn over it and revisit the assumptions and do a lot of what ifs on, okay, well, it seems good, but, you know, what if this or that happens? Yep. The other thing is, you know, it might be interesting from a listener feedback perspective is we've seen so much of our budget go to subscriptions in the last, you know, I mean, even more so this year. I thought we were done, but that number keeps getting bigger. And, you know, meanwhile, our, you know, kind of self-hosted infrastructure keeps getting smaller, like noticeably smaller, like less cooling required, kind of smaller. So yeah, it's sort of interesting how it's all evolving. And that sort of gives me pause to kind of look at it and think about it, especially in the context of what we do on the show and how we look at and think about and talk about these things. So that's kind of been an interesting, you know, going on. Seattle has had a crazy year. People may or may not know. I don't know if we brought it up, but about a year ago, we moved. And so just before I started the show with you, Brad, and downtown Seattle is changing. And as people who know who've been here, and I know a lot of people in our industry kind of come and do orbit around the center of gravity. Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of been crazy. A lot to reflect on, a lot to think about, but you know, a lot to be grateful for. It's been a very favorable year, I think, for the industry too. So yeah, good stuff's happening.
Yeah, and so a couple just minor things that have happened since we've talked last, actually, which was at Ignite.
Yes.
Microsoft has officially released 19H2. So that is now out and available. If you want to be rolling that up, you can do it, or you can kind of just sit and wait and make sure it's all hunky-dory.
I like that cautionary sort of, you could do it, but you know, and that's interesting because, you know, at home, I keep, as many good geeks do, I keep a good raft of devices around. And so I've systematically been going and updating the devices to, you know, various patch stages. And since they're, you know, optional and you can kind of defer, and some of them don't get started very often, it's been super interesting to pick up wherever I left off and march forward, you know, to various sort of major and minor you know, patch levels, and the process and sort of the interaction with the devices and all those things is different depending on what you do, the level of effort, the amount of time, depending on where you start and where you stop. Super interesting, and sort of interesting to think about in the context of what's going to happen next year and beyond as well. So that's sort of been on my mind too, especially with the time and effort. Some of these are kids' devices, so you know, I'm not caring as much about whether or not they're super supported. But for certain devices, I'm really worried about it because it has that, you know, little pen sketching device that my daughter wants so badly, and we work so hard to get working properly. And if I muck up those drivers, I'm gonna, you know, have a long troubleshooting session to unwind or get that back online, for example. So it's been interesting to sort of live a day in the life of maybe more the SMB IT person who kind of lives that, or the desktop support person who lives these sort of end user specific, you know, app support issues and all of that, as it pertains to some of these major and minor patches and semi-annual updates.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we haven't moved ahead with it. To, you know, to your point about the skeptical nod, our organization has not.
Yeah.
And we're not going to do latest for a while either. And this one's minor, right? 19H2 is really minor. 20H1 looks like some more stuff's in it, but kind of not as disruptive as some of the ones from this year. So yep. I don't know if it's too soon to start speculating on what the future is going to be, but
yeah, it'll be interesting too, because Microsoft, the way, if you, anybody hasn't installed 19H2, even in a dev environment, you'll notice that it installs really quickly. It installs much more just like any other patch rather than what we're traditionally used to, where it's that massive update where you got to kind of push your machine back, just wait a few minutes. Nope. Like, you can honestly probably accidentally install this and not even realize you're doing it.
Right. And so the question is this going to be somewhat the norm that we get into, right, more of, as our CTO Alan Marsh likes to say, back to the old days of TikTok, major, minor, mm-hmm, and his prediction is that the H1 update will be more major and have more bells and whistles, and the H2 update will be more minor, more service pack like, that just fixes and addresses and sort of re-baselines for the next H1 update, for example. Yep. So there's some interesting experimentation going on, and they even characterize it as experimentation, the Windows team is, as for how they're managing and handling some of these updates. My great hope is that some of these issues that are identified, maybe it's an AI issue, I don't know, but some of these insider kind of identified bugs and issues that are, making the forums or making the discussion, mm-hmm, either get recognized more as being higher risk and being addressed sooner, so that customers are impacted less, so that organizations like ours have a little more courage to move a little bit faster on them, but we're also pretty happy to sort of just stand pat. The other really interesting thing, Brad, is, especially the world that we live in our software business, is, you know, drivers are so central to what we do for customers in terms of helping them manage them. And so much of the way Windows deployment works has been a failure of the ability to make that sustainable, and that it's being made worse, actually, by the fact that now Intel is doing their generations not based on die changes. Yep. So every time the die shrinks, they would change generation numbers. Well, they're not doing that anymore. And they're sort of slipstreaming new generation procs into existing products. So for Lenovo, for example, the latest X1 Carbon and the whatever it is, the T490, I guess it is.
Yep.
Both got new processors and the model number didn't change. So for people who are trying to support these devices, that means, you know, huge curveballs, you know, we're sort of having to address it, and we have some nice handy ways to automate and manage through that. And so for our customers, it's less of an issue. And the way that we manage them in these discrete little packs and in layers, kind of, you know, it updates itself and all of that. But it also begs the question now of what happens with the patch and update strategy for Windows, where some of those have been disruptive to drivers and requiring driver updates. So there are elements of risk here. You know, I'm moving from sort of this lighthearted kind of what if and my kids' sure devices to more the deep end of the pool, where, you know, this is really, you know, a non-trivial, high-risk, productivity-disrupting potential problem for customers. So in a way, if indeed the update strategy goes tick-tock, it might bode better for customers anyway. If it's, you know, you've got one potential high-risk one that, yep, gets to marinate a little bit longer and people get to acclimate that, and, you know, early adopters can digest it, and we can have a constructive narrative around, oh, here's what you got to be aware of. And then H2 is a cleanup on that, that is not, you know, driver disrupting. Well, maybe things can level out a little bit more, right? Mm-hmm. But sorry to dominate the conversation, but no, I also have some thoughts and ideas on where things are going to go from a cloud deployment perspective, yeah, which of course we're also really bullish on. I believe it's still safe to say that we're the first ones to deploy from the cloud. And really, I think, well, the OEMs are doing it now as well, and they're doing it pretty full bore. But as far as standalone solutions, I don't know people who do it with the fluidity that we do, and even the way Microsoft is doing it. So we talked before in a past, I think two or three episodes ago, about how the Surface Pro X will be only be able to be deployed via or instantiated via a cloud deployment process. And it looks like 20H1 is going to make that possible, though not a requirement, for all Windows devices, Windows client. So that's sort of an interesting change and a bit of a tip of the hand as to where things are going, right? However, this is not Microsoft saying that they're going to support end-to-end fundamental Windows deployment in the classic sense from the cloud, right? That's not exactly what Autopilot does. And it doesn't appear that that's what the strategy is. Now, that could all change, and maybe these are the waters that they're testing. And there are still a bunch of gaps that have to be addressed. But basically, it looks like it's almost identical to what the Surface Pro X is talking about relative to it being more of a restore or recovery process and gets you back to clean baseline from which your management software then can pick up and give you your apps and lay down the rest of policy and do all the things that need to happen. So there are, for sure, we know some things that are coming in 2020 that are super interesting. It's really just a question of what that indicates relative to where what the end state vision is, or what the hypotheses are that they're testing, and where all of this is going to culminate, especially interestingly from a cloud delivery perspective, right? I mean, this is where it gets super juicy. And it's good. It's positive. It's good for everyone that it's going this way. It really is, in my opinion anyway. So
it's an interesting prediction for 2020. I don't think, you know, sometimes when we think of predictions, we think shake the magic eight ball and like, you know, let's see what the crystals say today. But that one's definitely rooted in a lot more foundational, information or tea leaves that Microsoft have been dropping on the ground. So that definitely seems, it all seems completely plausible, actually.
Yeah. I mean, some of it's, we have some facts. And so then the question is, all right, then where is this going? But if we like to not host things as much, and just as I led the conversation, right, our subscription line item in our software subscription line item in our budget is multiplying, and our software purchase line item or even just sort of our support line item and some of those things is shrinking. Our hardware budgets, especially data center hardware budgets, are shrinking. What does that mean for the way that we're going to consume Windows and use Windows in the future? And, you know, I still believe, and this is supported by other, really only by other people who believe the same thing, so it's just sort of confirmation bias, but, you know, using your endpoint as delivered remotely from the cloud is not great. So this VDI or hosted virtual desktop scenario still leaves a lot to be desired from a performance and a usability perspective. So whether it's VDI or just straight up Windows, you know, on hosted remotely on Azure or in your own cloud or wherever, is going to be workspaces. Yeah, there's use cases for it, but you know, for the most part, we believe, and our bet is that the endpoint is still the best way to get work done. It's the most productive way. It's the best experience. There are still trade-offs when you're traveling and, you know, issues that way. So, you know, that being the case, then what's the right end state? Well, some of these, you know, kind of hybrid VDI solutions, locally executed VDI have completely gone away. And so then there's an incremental in between that seems right, that does seem to be presenting itself, right, in some of these ways that both the OEMs are going after, that Microsoft seems to be going after, that we're going after. And I think that this conversation next year, which I hope we can continue this in 2020, is then going to be evidence of that, right? So we should probably remind ourselves, I'll make a calendar reminder that we need to revisit this very question of,
what actually happened, because I think it could be a really juicy year in terms of seeing that come to bear.
Yep.
We know that customers are doing this, large ones too, with their OEMs, where the OEMs are hosting their images in a cloud, allowing that to be, you know, deployed to devices at the time of manufacturing, so they show up at a better level of patch. Because the old way was to, you know, do it offline, or, you know, have some, you know, drop off situation. But by the time it gets back to you, you're either re-imaging anyway, which we know a lot of customers were, or you're sitting waiting in quarantine for things to get patched properly. So, Eaton, you know, there's so much productivity to be gained, right? And so the question is, where do we gain it, I guess?
Yep. Next year will be a very interesting year. One of the things that I really like that Microsoft did this year on the Windows side is what you started to talk about, is that it seems like they're going to a more TikTok, right? The spring update had a little bit more meat to it. The fall update was very minor. I don't think there's any other way to describe it. And I honestly hope that they stay with that cadence, because when they came out of the gate with Windows 10, what was that, 3-4 years ago now, it felt like they had something to prove, where Windows is still flexible and we can do major updates every 6 months and we're better than iOS or something like that. And now, I mean, it was crazy what they were doing. Uh-huh. And now I think they've come back to reality and said that was a little too bullish.
And I think a realization that Windows is a very different animal than Mac, and it doesn't need to be like that. It's its own thing, because when you have 550 million business users, you have a different set of responsibilities, right? Especially given the use case and legacy and the management context, the mushrooming compliance requirements, all of this, you know, sort of this future state of increasingly kind of overseen environments or managed environments, and the compliance requirements getting more stringent and gnarlier, even for ordinary sort of, I don't know, you know, big agencies, enterprises are used to a lot of governance and compliance. That's getting pushed down into the mid-market and SMB, which is, you know, creating an entirely different context. So that's making things richer, I think, and kind of growing the opportunity in a sense for Microsoft, cementing the future. But it also increases the risk in a way, and I think we've seen the confrontation of that this year, and hopefully, to your point, you know, sort of a rationalization of that. And I think that'll end up being, I agree, Brad, a very, very positive thing. If things can kind of slow down, and this, yes, we get these regular updates, and we call it all Windows 10, but we acknowledge that some of them are more earth-shattering than others in terms of the update cadence, and the monthlies really are just super simple and just there to hold down the fort and prevent problems. Mm-hmm. We're in a much more sustainable world then, right? And it makes all of the people who do, I was going to say our jobs, and it's unfair for me to say that that's my job anymore, but, you know, the IT job, much more sane and reasonable, right? It's unfair to devs to keep throwing them curveballs. It's unfair to you know, DevOps and IT managers to keep throwing curveballs like that. It's just creates all kinds of randomization and pain that, you know, can be applied toward moving the business forward. So
And you look at some of the major features that they shipped that kind of disrupted the game a little bit. You have like features like My People, which is now officially dead. They have this Windows Timeline, which they made a huge deal about, which you don't really hear much about that anymore. Like Paint 3D. They got a little off course about what people actually need Windows to do, because they were trying to make these flashy updates with new features rather than giving us the things we really want. And so it looks like Windows, I think, is headed in a really good direction for the next couple of years. At least I hope.
That's a great point, right? I mean, how do you focus on what really matters? And this, again, is a very, very large organization, even though, you know, Office 365 and Azure are the darlings. Mm-hmm. Windows is the, you know, kind of monster first among equals, maybe, of the large institutions inside Microsoft. So there's a lot of there are a lot of reasons why I guess things happen. Some of them are political. Some of them are just sort of, you know, things that have been boiling for a while that finally need to get off the range. You know, and there are a lot of drivers, I guess, that are seen and unseen by us. But when, the downside is then when yep. some of those internal forces see the light of day, then the public is sitting here asking, come on, seriously?
Yep.
But, you know, I guess that's just a little bit of the devil's advocate and friend in me saying, you know, there's more than meets the eye. And in order for maybe to put a fine point on it, for us to get to this place where it can be the stuff that really matters, we got to kind of, you know, sweep up the laundry room a little bit, right? We got to fold the socks, you know, in order to get to pressing the shirts, so to yep. speak, right? I don't know. I think there's probably a ton of that goes on, and some of that gets to us, and then we're still left to raise our, you know, palms and ask why. But yeah, I think in violent agreement that we're turning a nice chapter here. And, you know, not that there won't be more challenges. I think we're going to continue to see this, and someone's going to get really excited. Oh, we're going to change everything. And then, you know, it's not the change that anybody intended. But then you figure out, yeah, you know, there are some gems in here, and this is not a bad way to go. And we're going to make it really successful by following sort of the truth that was inside this vision, mm-hmm. Without kind of the noise and the energetic riffraff that accompanied it, right?
Yep, we will see. We will see what is going to go on in the Windows org for 2020. But Aaron, as we wrap it up here, not only this episode, but this year effectively, what's left on your agenda? I mean, if I remember correctly, you're a big skier.
Yes.
Is that officially kicked off up in the Seattle area?
It is ski season. It has been. My friends in the Rockies are gloating. But out here, you know, I've got my friends in the Rockies think we live on the coast. Seattle is not really on the coast. Mm-hmm. But the climate is that way, as some of my mountaineering going friends point out. And it has been unkind. It's been really warm. On the plus side, I've continued to ride my bike, which has been bizarre to do in yeah. December, but especially as a Minnesota kid, right? I mean, they're definitely not, I mean, some crazed Minnesotans, of course, are, as yep. I'm sure there are crazed Ohioans doing the same. But yeah, it's a little bit unusual, warm and dry, but it's making a turn right now. And so I'm kind of wringing my hands for that first really good day. But the hills, a couple of the areas are open, and the skiing is, as they say, bony and really thin. But it should get a nice base developing dump here of snow, some good Cascade concrete coming in.
Cascade concrete.
And set us up, yes. You know, Cascade concrete, Sierra cement, the whole business. I mean, the irony is that all these people in Utah and Colorado, they get as much bad snow as everywhere else. We just get the bad rap.
Yep.
You know, we get plenty of powder too, but we can leave that our little secret, perhaps. So yes, we're looking forward to a rich ski season and a great holiday with lots of hopefully sunny, snowy ski days. We'll see. Fingers crossed.
Yeah, winter officially kicks off in 10 days, I believe, the 21st.
Yeah, and I can't wait, because I'll tell you, it is dark here.
Yeah.
I mean, it has been really, really dark. And that's the one very daunting thing, having attempted some late season bike commuting, is the ride home in the dark can be terrifying in traffic, right? Yep. People aren't looking for you. They're, you know,
sure.
Distracted.
Who's biking in
by
December?
A million
like, who's biking
things.
In December? I mean, it's
right, exactly in the dark and the rain. So, but you know, we'll take it. It's just great to be able to be outside, and regardless of whether it's on a bike saddle or on a pair of skis and continue, or even just going for a walk around the neighborhood, it's a wonderful, wonderful time of year. So, everyone should make the most of it.
Yeah, it's that the reason why I remember the 21st is that's winter solstice, and that's when we actually start getting time very slowly back.
Yes, importantly,
or daylight, I should say. Should be getting daylight. Yes. Well, if all goes well, the next time we chat, which is about a month from now, my basement remodel might be done.
Oh, awesome. I'll expect a full report.
if I could spin this camera, I think I'm going to be ordering drywall next week. And so it's going to be a white Christmas in our house, but mostly white drywall powder.
Yes. Yes.
I think the framing, I would say, is 90% done. And so I'm going to finish that up this weekend. And I'm going to do the last electrical run. I got a whole bunch of this stuff, which this isn't the right stuff. I got to take this back, actually. The networking cables.
Oh, you're running your own network. Wow.
You got to do it before I hang that drywall. Otherwise,
that looked like that was punched down and everything. People should look at the video podcast here, because that looked like, yeah, is that 100 feet of cable? Yeah, yep. you're all punched down and everything there.
Yeah, the problem is that this is Cat 5e, and I want to run Cat 6.
Six, yeah.
I didn't realize when I bought it. You didn't do what the serious
geeks do and go get yourself, you know, whatever, the 500-yard spool, even though you'll only use 100 feet of it. Go and get, you know, 100 meters and go crazy.
Yeah,
overwire everything. And then,
I have run my own cables and crimped my own cords in a prior life. And you know what? For the extra couple bucks to buy it pre-made, it's worth it. It's worth it. I'm not worried about twisted pairs.
Quick closing story that's very pertinent to our audience. I finally got fiber at my house, and it is so great. And while it was going on, because I just had my home redone and rewired with Cat 6 mm-hmm. everywhere, I was like, no, we're not going to leave this halfway done. And I implored of the installer who, you know, ran it from the utility pole.
Yep.
To the house, to the little up converter, yep. into the modem. I said, hey, I had to cut this in order to get the glass in here. Would you please punch these two back down? And bless his heart, he did it on the spot, just rip, zip, zip. And I just breathed a sigh of relief, because I have done that job too more than once. And happy to leave the layer one to somebody else.
Yeah, that's, I've got fiber too. The connection's probably 8 feet from my head at a diagonal, and fiber is wonderful.
It's great, right?
It's good for your diet, it's good for your internet.
and on that note,
Aaron, we very much appreciate you hanging out with us in 2019. We're looking forward to 2020 and everybody else. Thanks for tuning in for the end of the year episode. Hit that subscribe button down below, and we'll catch all of you right back here next time.